In today's episode of First Moves, we're talking to Marta Pareja-Boto, a finalist of the Maastricht University Challenge with her startup EpiPen. We'll talk about her experience competing in the Maastricht University Challenge and her personal motivation behind starting EpiPen. We hope you enjoy this conversation.
Marta, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Could you tell us where you're from and how you ended up here in Maastricht?
There's a long answer and a short answer, so I'll take the short for now. I'm from Spain. I was born in Cádiz, which is like very, very south. But actually, I grew up like in between Sevilla, Madrid, all over the place in Spain. And then I moved out and went to Italy, Denmark. And I ended up in Maastricht because they have this Maastricht science program that allows you to mix the sciences. And I wasn't sure what science I wanted to take for like pursue my dream or whatever. So I was like, okay, let's try them out. Ended up here. And now I don't want to leave. So we'll see.
And how did that international upbringing shape you as a person, do you think?
I actually had this conversation with my roommate like 3 days ago because we were like looking through the Instagram, you know, like the archive stories. And I was absolutely different when I lived in Spain to when I lived in Italy. And then I saw pictures from Copenhagen. I was like, wow, like I was a different person. And now that I see myself, I can start to see every single piece in one. I'm guessing probably like in a couple of years, I'll be like, you were wrong. But for now, I think not only the cultures itself, but also like how I see the world and how I'm like open to take opportunities that before for me were like, nah, like that's scary. Now I don't feel scared for those. So I would say that's international piece in me.
Very nice. And maybe a bit more background as to what you do here in Maastricht. So now you're at MSP. You said you didn't quite know where to start. So how have you found your path so far with the courses there?
So in MSP, they allow you to, first you have to take the intro courses, which are mandatory. So you take physics, biology, chemistry, and then like a bit of liberal arts to like go in details with the ethics of the science world. So then I was in my physics course because I didn't take physics in high school, but I did take maths because I'm a bit of a nerd. So I really like maths. And then in the physics course, I was like, oh, I like it. For some reason, I actually understand things. So I was like, should I give it a try? So I started taking like some physics and astronomy courses. And I was like, oh, I like astrobiology. I like maths. Let's see how it goes. Then I took a course that it's cosmology, which for me was like, oh, what is this? Like, why am I taking it? And then ended up liking it a lot. Probably I'll do my thesis on it. So I don't like it allows you to pick bit by bit without worrying too much on like what are you going to do later. But at the same time, it kind of like allows you to have a science degree. So I think that's MSP.
I mean, it sounds like you've definitely found your path then with astronomy and physics. But that is quite a contrast, of course, to EpiPen.
It is.
So I'm curious. Okay. Could you tell us what EpiPen is to begin with?
Okay, so EpiPen was first an idea, now a prototype, and hopefully one day it'll be an actual startup. But EpiPen, it's all about allowing people with allergies to be safe when they go out for restaurants and also be willing to go to restaurants. So yeah, I'm an astronomer. I have nothing to do in the business world, so to say. But I am also kind of unlucky in that sense because I suffer from allergies since I'm like 2 years old. So it started with nuts and now it's nuts, everything that comes from the cow. It's like lots of things. So whenever I have to go to a restaurant, it's a bit, I don't really feel like going because I could die. So not really. And then I had a commercializing science course where we had to take like one of our issues and try to see how we would solve it or what opportunities are there to like allow you to find a solution to the problem. And my solution was coming up with a platform. This platform connects the customer, which usually is people with allergies, or maybe like parents that have kids and their kids have allergies, to search for restaurants and be in contact with restaurants within your region. You can put the allergies that you have, and then we filter through the app in the restaurants that you can eat. And not only that, like we don't tell you, oh, you can eat here, but also what you can eat, because sometimes I can go to a restaurant that is like, oh, nuts free. And then I go there and they only have like a salad and it's a bit sad, you know, like, oh, like I wish they had a burger. So you can see in the menu what they have, and if you like it, you can go.
I mean, it sounds like a great concept, and I also had like a gluten intolerance and a dairy intolerance myself, so I know the struggles of going out to eat, and for me that was only a stomach pain and nothing beyond that. So yeah, I can imagine for other people it's a far bigger issue, because even for me it was frustrating. I think what stands out though is that you have this commercializing science course.
Yeah.
And I think every single student there had to come up with an idea, but you took it to the next level throughout kind of the months thereafter with the university challenge and things like this. So I think your motivation is a bit deeper than simply doing it for the course. Where do you think this motivation comes from?
Okay, so when I was younger, like way younger, because I still lived in Spain, and I was moving to Italy, I had this company, it's like Pretty Full Dreams, and it's all about like dairy, because I did it with my mom. Also, when I was deciding for my degree, you always kind of like look up to your parents, I would say, usually. And my dad has a business or like works for a business, and my mom as well. So there was like no scientist, so to say, that could lead me somewhere. So obviously when I asked my parents, they were like, oh, you should study business. It's like, yeah, well, I would be good at it, I think. Like, why not? You know, like I grew up in that kind of environment. But then they tell you, oh, like you should follow your dream. I was like, yeah, but my dream is not to be like studying business. So that's why I obviously went for sciences. But when I got to the course, like to my degree, and I saw that there was one of the courses that was commercializing science, I was like, oh, I can mix two things that I like in one. So let's see how it goes. So I went to the commercializing science course, and of course, like you could see that some people were there just to like look around and see what the opportunities are, and some people were actually there to find a solution to something. I would say my motivation is like from a personal view. Obviously, it comes from me, but also I've been quite supported. So I have super supportive parents. I have a sister that supports me with everything. Like, no matter if the idea is like trash, she'll say like, oh, you're amazing, go for it, like follow your dreams. And then also my group of friends here, like I found my second family. So whenever like I presented, they came to my course, like in the presentation, they actually sneaked in the lecture hall when it was only supposed to be students from my course, but they were like, ah, I don't care. Like, I'm going to see it. And they saw the presentation, and afterwards they were like, Marta, you have to like try to do something with it. So I was like, yeah, you know what? If people believe in me, I should also. So I went for that. And
that sounds super awesome to have that support system as well. But if you don't mind, I'm curious about that kind of personal proactiveness, because I think that's something that you've shown beyond EpiPen. And it's not like that's the only topic of conversation today. Like you said, you had Pretty Full Dreams, which was, I believe, a jewelry brand run through Instagram when you were like 15, as you said. Like, where do you think this comes from, this proactiveness, or why is it important to you?
So thing is, like, I see other people that have that motivation, so to say, but only with the final goal, or like, I don't know, I don't really like those goals of like, I want to be a billionaire. It's like, yeah, sure, like go for it, but then you're gonna be a billionaire and what? Since I was like, I don't know, maybe 10 or so, I've always been too curious. Like maybe with my grandma, I would be like, oh, my grandma, what were you talking about? Like, what did your friend say? Like things like that. And she would be like, what are you, like, it's not your business. Like things like that. So for that, like I would say like I've always been really curious. But the proactive motivation, I would say it comes from like, I'm never satisfied with some, it could sound like, she's always going to be sad, or like she's never going to feel good enough. But it's not like that. Like, I'm satisfied with what I do, but I always see that there's something else. So it's like, like maybe I can take it farther and farther and farther. So like, oh, if it doesn't work out, I already have my no. I'm satisfied with what I did. But why not taking the opportunity? And also maybe I like to make my parents or my family proud. And the only way that I see that I can do that, it's like, oh, if I'm proud of myself, maybe they could be proud as well. And the only way that I have to be proud of myself is to see that the things that I do actually impact other people, and not just, oh, I'm going to be a millionaire.
That's cool. And that's actually a topic that comes up quite often already for us with just a few episodes. It's
very often.
Yeah, it's very much like, okay, you could be solving for money, but then what else?
What are you going to do with it?
Exactly.
Like, I truly wonder when some people come up to me like, oh yeah, I have this idea. I'm going to be a millionaire tomorrow. Like, and then what are you going to do with that money? Like, I wish I had something that I could invest that money on and then continue it forever. But they just don't, I don't know why, they just don't share the same opinion.
Now that we have a better picture of your personal motivations that kind of underlie many things that you do, I want to zero in a bit more on ApiPen. You already mentioned that you had some dietary restrictions. So how does this actually play into how you design ApiPen as a platform? And your thought process behind it.
Okay. I don't want to say that it was only me, because I had like my colleague, friend, lifesaver, it's Rafa. Rafa was the whole time supporting me. At first, when I had to do my like presentation for the course itself in uni, I had like 2 days to make an advertisement video. And though I'm really good with social media, I'm super bad with technology, like really bad. My friends call me grandma for a reason. I would say it's probably because of the technology. So I was like, oh, Rafa, please, like, you know a lot about content making, or like, I think it's called like CX. I don't know. But he's super good with it, like seriously good. So I was talking to him, and at first I was like, oh, I want to create a website. And then he was like, are you sure you want to create a website? Like, I don't want to twist your opinion or your idea, but maybe a platform, an app. I was like, oh, yeah, sure. Like, if you see it, we can do it. So we worked during the summer on it. Then in September, when I came back, I was like, oh, I'm not going to tell you for now, but maybe we could do a challenge and stuff like that. And he's like, yeah, I don't want to stress out now. I have my things. And then in November, I was like, Rafa, we're in. And then he came up with like all the ideas. We had all the meetings. I was like, yeah, maybe an app is too much, but we can do the platform. How would I use it? Because he's very focused on user. And for me, because I'm the user, I don't think of those things. I just see it and that's it. So he thinks like, oh, why are you choosing that and not the other thing? So then I have to think about it. And he's like, oh, thank you so much. And then that's why we ended up creating the platform.
And how did you end up meeting Rafa in the beginning and dragging him onto this one, becoming your lifesaver?
Probably sometimes Rafa would say, I hate you for it, because we had to work way too much on the app. But so when I came here, I was living in the student housing from UM. And then, you know, like we were 100 students first year, maybe second year, but we were like all living together away from your parents. So you end up like maybe having dinners or getting to know other people from other like student housing. And I used to live in the 4th and he used to live in the 10th. And in the 10th, you know, they were like the cool kids. So they did all the parties and like dinners, maybe like went for drinks or stuff. And then one day I was in the 4th floor with another Spanish person. And then this person was like, oh, you would really like Rafa, I would say, because he's like, I don't know, doing 100 things at the time. And I was like, oh, maybe I can get to know him. So I went to the 10th floor and knocked on his door like, hey, I'm Marta. Maybe it's a bit weird, but like someone told me that we're going to be friends. And Rafa was like, yeah, sure, why not, come in. And then he showed me like all the YouTube creation. I don't know, like he has iPads and so many things and cameras and everything. So he's like, Rafa, you know what? We don't know each other, but you're going to work for me and I'm going to work for you no matter what. And that's how we started being friends, so to say, in September, and then building the relationship in April. He ended up helping me. Thanks, Rafa, for that. But yeah.
And then how did that evolve towards actually entering the challenge and going through the challenge?
Okay, so when we first got to the challenge, we didn't see ourselves in the finals. Like, let's be honest, I saw other projects. I was like, wow, like we worked a lot. Our job is amazing. But you compare it to other people that maybe worked on the same project for like 5 years and you're like, wow, like we really have to start working and they're amazing. Let's try to get their ideas and ask them like, how did they do that or stuff like that. So yeah, when we first got to the challenge, for us was a bit of a, let's see how other people are doing. But then we are both really competitive in that sense. So we saw that we could do things that other people were doing. And I think like from November till maybe January, like even in Spain, we have this Christmas that is called Reyes Magos, which is like kind of Santa Claus, but Spanish tradition. Even that day, he was available for a call. And we were like all during that day, like, Rafa, like, let's do this. And like, let's do the other thing, blah, 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 blah. So I would say we first started like, let's keep it super calm, chill. This is just like an idea. And then in 3 months, we were like prototyping. We have to do that. That was our challenge.
And where did that excitement come from? Because I know that feeling. So I'm curious, like, where did it come from for you?
I would say it came from the fact that I saw myself with a real thing. Like, when you have the idea and, like, you talk to people and it was like, oh, yeah, it's such a good idea, but it's just an idea. You have the excitement of, like, yeah, I have a good idea, but that's it. And then when you see that the idea can become something and, like, you can show it to people and say, like, hey, I'm not solving a problem for me, but like I'm also trying to help, and see that you could actually end up doing it and work on it and spend your time, and not only spend your time as in like I have to work, but working in something that makes you happy satisfied me. And I think also Rafa would be happy.
We've talked about it a bit, but I want to go more in depth as to how Maastricht University supported you in your entrepreneurial journey, particularly as a STEM student, because we see it at a lot of universities, a lot of people who study in the sciences and physics who have really great ideas. They're maybe not given the right support to act on those ideas. So maybe if you could enlighten us, how has Maastricht really helped you in that process?
Okay, that's for sure. Like, obviously, I'm in sciences, so I get a lot of, like, my contacts are in the science field. And you hear crazy ideas like, oh, there is like this bacteria that can do that and that and that and that. Super expensive. Any idea that comes from a student, if you present it to your uni, it's like, wow, crazy. You're a 10. Giving you a 10. Present it for your thesis. And then? Super expensive. We don't have the resources. Go to another university. Find another thesis tutor that can like support you for your PhD. For nothing. Like, seriously, like, I feel really affected for that, because it's not only for me, like, obviously, like, maybe I come up with an idea one day and I'm like, I have no funding, but I see it with other persons or, like, maybe my friends that come up with ideas and I'm like, wow, you really need support, financing, and also, like, leading you towards something. And, for example, in Spain, that doesn't happen. In Italy, it doesn't happen. Denmark is different. Denmark, I would say they support their students quite a lot. And here in Maastricht, when I first arrived, I thought that it was like a bit chaotic. Also, because we have a lot of international students that come and leave. So maybe you're here for 3 years, you have a great idea in uni, and then you leave somewhere else with your idea. And I think that Maastricht University in the recent years kind of changed a bit and realized the problem. And that's when they started taking like multidisciplinary, maybe, so to say, view. When the marketing of the UM Challenge or any opportunity that you had with like other universities, maybe Eindhoven or Amsterdam, they take that and they don't only like publish it in the SBE building. They also put posters around the medicine faculty. Maybe they use Instagram or social media, which is, in my opinion, quite powerful, because I'm like always on Instagram seeing like, oh, like someone is here, someone is there, like Maastricht University. And it's quite nice. So I would say Maastricht University, the use of social media, the use of knowing that they don't only have international students, which is super powerful, but they also have the opportunity of mixing up faculties, because it's not that medicine students only talk to medicine students. At the end, Maastricht, it's a city, but it's quite a student city. And I don't know about yourselves personally, but maybe I'm in a dinner and if we're 10, none of us study the same thing. So you can tell other people like, oh, this is my degree and this is what we do and this is the opportunities that we offer. Oh, you could join. There is this job. There is this. So maybe not the faculty itself or the organization as Maastricht, but organizations led by students, of course, are doing quite great, in my opinion, at sharing with other people and not only like restricting themselves to people that they know.
I get a lot of that, because also at UCM where I studied, it's basically MSP, but not for sciences, but for basically anything else. And I would focus on business and psychology, but there would be other students doing international relations and economics, for example. And so you get to see these crazy intersects, and you're in the same tutorial group. So for that course, you're doing the same thing. But meanwhile, you're coming from completely different angles. And I think that's also something that I at least noticed with the university challenge is you have different students from different faculties coming together, showing mind-blowing ideas. And I'm curious, did any moment or do any moments stand out to you from that challenge where someone came with a particular input for ApiPen of how it could be improved or something to think about?
For sure. If we scientists have a common issue, it's legal terms. We're super bad with anything, or in my opinion, as a general thing that I saw in my faculty, we're super bad with law or like any legal term behind it and stuff like that. So for me, everything is possible. Like, what do you mean I cannot publish like everyone's information online? Why wouldn't I? You know, like, it's just for helping people with their allergies. So this one person, I can't remember the company, maybe it was like Leo, that came up to us and was like, I love the idea, but you need like a data scientist to secure your data. I was like, oh, thank you for that one. Because we have the science behind it. We have the like technology as in content creating. We have that. Business plan, we have it because we've been talking and we had lots of like workshops where we were like given the opportunity to learn. So we have that. But then in terms of how that world goes, no idea. So yeah, I would say getting to see that people see your things, but as you said, like they see it from different angles, for me was crazy. Like I think we got to the finals because we got every single angle that we could and we worked on that angle as I think like Rafa one time said, like, oh, you have to put yourself as if you had like the VR like goggles. And imagine then you are thinking as the person that gave you the idea. So then we actually did the try with like sunglasses. I was like, oh, yeah, here I am. I'm doing law. And then we came up with like super good ideas because we were just like making fun or laughing around, having fun, and then came up with a good result.
That's awesome to use those different frames. How was it actually to be in the finals for you?
Well, long time ago. That week was full nervous. Like, I really like presenting. And I mean, I studied IB, like the International Baccalaureate, and they focus since you're like 10 on your presentation skills. Because, like, to be honest, like, when you get to like present anything, it doesn't matter if it's like yourself, you can get nervous. Like, how old are you? I'm like, so it's like super normal. It's something that we, I think, all experience at least once in our life. And for me, it was the very first time since I was in high school that I experienced that. No, I don't want to present. So yeah, that week was crazy. Like I had to study the script because it was only like 1 minute pitch, right? Or like 90 seconds. And I had to say so many things in so little that for me was like, no, like I'm going to forget this. And then if I forget this, like I'm not going to be able to recap and like, what am I going to do? So I tried every single thing. Like I went on TikTok to see like how people prepare for their pitches. Then I had like a script that I put like in the shower. I was like, yeah, I'm going to repeat it when I'm in the shower, like for sure. So I went like full week only with that pitch. And then the moment that I was like released with the pitch, I forgot everything. I was like, if you tell me now to repeat this the pitch that I've been preparing for a week, I don't know it. Like I said it, I don't know it. So it was interesting to see how nervous I could get with an idea that I've been working for a year. Like I know everything. I created the idea. If I have to say something like wrong, I can. It's my idea. And then I only realized after the final, right? Like before the final, I was talking to Rafa like, oh, we're everything has to be perfect. No, it doesn't. And I think like winners or people that didn't even get the chance to be in the finals now would say the same. Like it doesn't matter if you say it wrong. Like the point is saying it wrong, getting the feedback, and then continue. And I only realized later.
So having gone through that kind of preparation phase of studying it in the shower and everywhere. If you time traveled back now to that week, in the beginning of that week, but with the knowledge you have now, would you prepare differently for the same pitch?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, I think I wouldn't memorize it. And after, like, after my final, I had some courses. Like today, I had to present a final project that I'm doing, nerdy project. It was like building a habitat in Mars. So I had to present it today. And we were six in the group, and none of them wanted to present. Like we were like for a month, no one wanted to present. And then 3 days ago, I was like, hey, if no one wants to present, it's fine. Like I can take it. Didn't prepare it like at all. I seriously, like today, I got to the university. I was like, no. Like maybe I had to prepare something. Didn't have time. Didn't do it. Presented, best presentation in my life. Because I know what I have to say. So I don't have any requirements. If someone feels like they missed something in my presentation, they have the time at the questions to ask. I got the questions. I knew how to reply because it's my project. Like, why wouldn't I know how to reply? So I think maybe going back, obviously, it's 90 seconds, so you have to prepare it, but maybe with bullet points and knowing what the slides were, and that's it.
It's also funny that you say now with the presentation, like, it's like my project, I know how to do this. And I remember during one of the workshops we got also for the University Challenge, where Roy, he gave us this pitching workshop, where he actually said, for the love of God, don't memorize your script, because as soon as you lose one word, your brain is going to go in to be like, oh no, I missed it, oh no, this doesn't work out. And what did everyone do? We all memorized it.
Yeah.
We all did it in the end. Anyway.
I didn't.
Exception like of Stein. Most of us, at least, we memorized it. And then you fall into that again. So I think we all learned that experience as well, that you know it anyway. Like, there's no need to stress memorize so much about it.
Yeah. I mean, I would probably now go back and tell Roy, like, please, please actually tell me, like, 5 times so that I hear you out. But we're humans, and until we experience this, we don't believe it. So I had to go through that mistake to see why Roy said it, why it was given as a like requirement, so to say, in the pitch workshop, and also feel kind of stupid for not listening. But what can we do?
I mean, yeah, but what I always try to do, at least in those moments, is try to understand, like, why do they say this? And I think, like, I've done a lot of public speaking so far, or a lot for my age, I guess you could say. And I think, like, the main thing is that if you memorize something word for word, you actually lose the skill to articulate what you're saying. You're simply memorizing words, but not the meaning. And I think if you understand the underlying meaning, then you can actually articulate things in a story in a way that's far more captivating. And I think that's where you saw so many people get wrong. Because I think the nerves were very much justified, because it was in front of around 300 people.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how many, but then the chance that you have a brain fart, as I call it, where you just forget everything, is so much higher. And then if you forget the meaning and the story you want to tell, you're screwed. So I don't know. I think for me, that's a
completely agree.
That's what I try to take with it.
I completely agree.
I think beyond that, you've already started to touch upon some of the challenges before that you faced while developing EpiPen. Could you maybe expand on a bit more of the difficulties that you had beyond, let's say, the legal ones of protecting people's data? What other things have you run into while developing?
I would say main issue was the actually developing, like programming. We did have a program, but obviously, like, if you're not a programmer, to program an app, it's super difficult. So I tried my best. Like, I watched all the YouTube videos and everything I could. I took, like, I don't know if you know, like, edX courses. So I took like 3 edX courses, like for I don't know, like Python, LaTeX, any language. But then of course, like, it's impossible. So I did develop the program to a point. Then I also like had some help with some friends that knew about it. But if you program it, then you have to like keep running it and keep actually like, I don't know, like changing the program and the code. So for me, that was impossible. And when we tried to get a developer, obviously, like in such a little time, either the price would be crazy or I didn't have the funding from anyone in that sense, like before the final. So to pay it like from the pocket is like actually kind of like risking a lot of money because you don't know where it's going to be or where is it going to go or if the programmer, it's going to stay working for you or it's just going to develop the program and then leave. And then what do you do with the code? So programming was a main thing as an issue. Obviously, legal terms were a big issue. And then also because of the international kind of thing. So I wanted to start in Maastricht because I had the idea of Maastricht. And I see that lots of restaurants have the contact with students and they kind of look for ideas from students to develop like Data One or like there are multiple restaurants in Maastricht that actually are like willing to take students' ideas. But then obviously in terms of like language or legal aspects, for me it was easier to start it in Spain. Rafa said that we should start it everywhere in Europe. So where to start, it's a big issue, I would say.
And could you maybe expand on where EpiPen is now? So you've gone through the idea, you were in the prototyping category, you were in the final. Where are you now?
So after the final, the nice thing about it, it doesn't matter if you win or you don't. You get contact, you get feedback, you get opportunities. So we got opportunities with three restaurants here in Maastricht that are willing to take our platform. We are presenting in Eindhoven Challenge for the university in September. I think the final, it's coming like in April or May. So we still have like long, long journey next year. I started to like be in contact with some companies in Spain to see if the idea would work in Spain. And then Rafa, it's now taking the whole app development. So he's in charge of like how to actually create the app, how to develop it. He's doing a crazy, crazy job with the website. It looks like from, I don't know, like 2050, that website, it's still going to be new. So, yeah, I think that's it. Like, we're working on it, but not anything like super new or...
I mean, yeah, I think you're very much laying the foundation when you're in this phase. So yeah. I think it makes total sense. And also super exciting, you have more of these opportunities to not only present like you've done at UM, but also... test with restaurants. I think that will be a super learning intensive time, but with your attitude, I think that you'll learn a lot and come a long way. So
I hope so.
That's exciting. And then how about the difficulties of having EpiPen next to your studies, because UM is a demanding university. It's one of the best young universities in the world, and it requires a lot of self-management and a lot of self-study. So how the hell do you manage or try to have EpiPen next to your studies?
Thing is, like, I work, I have my study, and then I have EpiPen, and then my family lives away, so I have to visit them. I live alone, so I have to manage my life alone, like every single student here, I would say. So I would say stress level were quite high during the finals. Now they're a bit more chill because it's just like researching, literature review, having like maybe weekly, maybe once a week to meet and see where EpiPen is going, what news we had or who contacted us that week. Oh, super exciting. So I think the main like what helped me was, okay, what is my priority today? How is it going to change? And is it going to keep being my priority for way too long as to make it priority number one? When I was in February and I had the final, I had a priority. Obviously, it was EpiPen. If the final went good or we had like super good research and opportunities afterwards, it would be maxed 1-2 months. And then my exams came, so priority changed. And that's something that I learned mostly this year, but also last year, that priorities, you have to like kind of like sit down the first day of the month and say, okay, what are my priorities this month? Because if not, I'm going to go crazy. Like if everything is a priority, you end up doing nothing. So I start now my month, like first, second of the month. And like, okay, now it's time to sit down and see, okay, last month I did this. Am I going to continue with this as priority number one, or am I changing? And then maybe my job is priority number one this month. Maybe my studies is, depends.
What's your job?
Okay, so I'm a math teacher here in the, well, it's like in the international school, and I teach last year's students, so before they graduate. So I've been teaching now 2 years, and I saw people graduate and go from maybe like a 3 to a 7 and being super happy and like going to Eindhoven TU University to do like some aerospace engineering. I'm like, wow, like in 10 years, you're going to be teaching me, and that's going to be crazy.
And for the people listening that don't know what a 3 to a 7 is in IB terms, yeah. a 7, it's the like highest 10. You can get. It's like a 10. And a 3 is the bare minimum passing grade for some of the subjects.
Building on that, you've had these challenges to overcome, and you're already speaking of some of the things that you learned to mitigate them. What are some other key lessons that you've learned from your entrepreneurial experience so far? Being pretty full dreams, EpiPen, ain't no granny, whatever. What did you learn from them?
Okay, I learned that no matter if people say you're not getting anywhere, it really doesn't matter as long as you believe it. As it doesn't matter if people tell you, oh, you're going to be great. Like, wow, you're if you don't believe it. Like, it, in my opinion, everything is based on what you believe. And I don't want to lie. Like, maybe some months you believe in yourself and other months you're like, I'm not worth it. I'm not going to make it. And those months are kind of like the worst ones, I would say. Because it's a month where you have to act as the person that you were last month. And you're like, oh, yeah, last month I said that I was going to do this because I believed in myself. And now where is that? So you have to act as if, you know, like you're actually going to do it. And when you're there, some people don't see that you're not believing in yourself. So they just keep pushing you like, come on, like, why are you not doing it? And it's like, I have nothing to tell you. Like, I don't have a reason why I'm not feeling motivated or I don't believe in myself. It's just like it changed and now I don't know what to do. And if you keep pushing me, I'm just going to burn out and then not going to do anything. So opening up to people that you have in your close friends or maybe close family or even to yourself, like, you have to be able to say, oh, I don't want to do this now. I don't feel like doing this now. Or I don't have the motivation or trust in myself that I had before. So I have to stop, take a moment. It's nothing's going to change in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, apart from you. So if today you don't want to do something, you can stop and take it in next month. That's it. Like, opportunities are going to be there. Maybe it's not this week that you're going to be the next, I don't know, astronaut, but you can be next week and that's okay. It's not going to cost anything. And when I first started with all my, like, well, everything that I did, mainly when I was in Prettyful with my mom was the one that took moments and was like, Marta, no, not this week. Like, you have an exam tomorrow. Focus on the exam. And I was like, no, mom, like, tomorrow no one's going to want to buy my bracelet. What do you mean? Like, obviously, they're going to like it today, tomorrow, and next week. It's just, it's just you thinking that if today you get, three people that like it, then next week you're going to get five. No, maybe next week you get five, and this week it's okay if you don't get anyone.
Just being a bit more calm about everything and not being so, like, as in Dutch we say, like, stress kip, which is like stress chicken, where you're just worried about everything and, yeah, like,
feel that.
You want to control everything and make sure it all goes well. Good, so letting that go a bit, I can relate to that for sure. And then how have these lessons also influenced things outside of maybe your own projects, but also your academic endeavors? Because, you know, you're still studying at the university, you still have another year to go in your bachelor's. So how do you carry that forward?
So I would say, like you already said, UM is quite challenging and they expect students to give their maximum. And when you're in class, you see people that give their maximum. You see people that don't care, but that's okay. And you have to decide whether you want to give your maximum, whether you don't want to do anything, or whether you want to keep it as it is. When I started, I was like, oh, I'm getting a 10 in everything. Like, this has to be a 10. This has to be a 10. It doesn't matter. Like, I don't want to sleep today. I'm not sleeping tomorrow. I'm just going to keep studying, 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 and then doing my exam. What happened was that then after my second exam, when I was like full on studying and stuff, I didn't get a 10. And that was a thing. Because before I came to the university, it's true that like in school, I was good. Like, I had to study. I put every single effort that I could. IB students know what I'm talking about because those 2 years are crazy. But also I graduated a year earlier. So I had to like, you know, like fill the gaps of everything that I missed in my studies. So when I came here, I kept the same motivation, same stress level, same goal of everything has to be a 10 or like a minimum an 8. And then I saw that uni wasn't that. Uni, it's all about learning, all about using your resources, going to tutors and professors and asking like, hey, it's not that I don't want a 10 in your class. It's just that I need to understand. Like, there are so many things that you know, and maybe you assume that other people know, but I just don't know. And it's okay. My dad always said it when I got here, that he saw that I changed from being at home and saying like, oh, dad, I know, to I don't know. Like, and he never, like, I think till I got here, the I don't know, like the sentence came out of my mind like 3 times in my life. And now it's a daily thing. Like, oh, I don't know. Can you explain? What do you think? It's, I don't know, it's nice to see how you can apply everything to everything.
So, Marta, you keep racking up the list of all these things you've done. And one thing that stood out to us as we were doing our research is that you actually have the biggest following of anyone that we've spoken to so far online. So you have, as far as we check, last 21.3K followers on TikTok and about 4.5 on Instagram. Why?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, my mom, she doesn't know. Like, she doesn't know that I have followers. My dad doesn't care. My sister is the only one that is like, wow, like, you have so many followers. And then my friends, before they know me, or like when I meet someone, they don't know. And that's something that I like. I don't like when people come up to you like, oh, you're a TikToker. It's like, okay, like, thanks, next. Like, I don't mind that. The reason why I started when I was in Italy, because I suffered from COVID pandemic, whatever, 2 years. Like, my city was the first one in Europe, so we closed in 10th of February, and we opened up in December 2022. So it was like 2 years full lockdown. I didn't go to school. I couldn't visit my family back in Spain, so... And also, I was in another country with my parents. They just got there. So, different house. We didn't know anyone. So, it was a rough time. And then, when you're there, you start using your social media and you start, like, talking to people. I remember with my sister, we used to do lives on TikTok. And it was, like, super funny because you could, like, join to other people. And my friends could be in the live and stuff. And then, during that time, with my sister, we started designing some, like, pieces of fashion, like, just to see like what outfits would look like. And we posted them on TikTok, and then I would get some views, and that's it. And then when I went out of COVID, I started posting more videos on like, oh, I'm going to go to Copenhagen for this, or I'm studying IB and this is what I'm doing. Also to promote my Prettyful Dreams. I started promoting it there. So I started to build an audience, but not huge. And then when I came here to Maastricht, I posted a couple of videos on me studying astrophysics as a career. And I got super good feedback on those videos because it's weird to see someone that posts videos on like TikTok or Instagram of fashion and then studies astrophysics. You know, it's weird to see, and I know I'm aware, it's okay. I laugh about myself. It's like, ah, I'm nerdy. I look at my outfit today and that's it. So I want to say that the reason why I have the audience is because I'm honest and I don't post only one thing. It's like I open up like, it's okay. I study physics. What can I do? So many TikTokers just don't tell people what they study, or maybe only post themselves or their houses and their fashion, and that's it. I kind of enjoy talking to my friends in TikTok and then filming the video so other people can see what we do, why we live here, and that there are these opportunities that you can take, because when you're in an environment that these opportunities don't come up, it's difficult to see them. So my cousins, for example, so many times are like, oh, I want to do Erasmus, and they want to go for 6 months and then come back. Until they do the Erasmus, that's the goal. Then when they're in the Erasmus, it's like, oh, now I know that I can work there and it's okay. Like, maybe I can move there for 2 years. But when you are in Spain, just like lockdown, you don't see that. So
We've spoken a lot about all these different projects you have, ranging from building apps to astronomy and physics and anything in between, jewelry, whatever. What do you think is this, maybe it's not one, but these overarching goals that you have that you want to kind of contribute to during your lifetime?
For sure, I want to feel happy. No matter what I do, like, I seriously don't mind what job I end up doing or who I end up working with. I just want to, like, actually feel happy. And I know that I want to feel happy because sometimes I wasn't happy. And when you miss something, you're like, wow, I wish I was as happy as I was last month. And then when you're happy, you're like, chill. that's okay. Like, you don't think, oh, I'm feeling super happy. No, you just don't think. You just keep going, keep living. I see my parents. I see my sister. I see my friends. And mostly I see my grandparents. I didn't mention them, but I feel like mentioning them now. They suffered from so many different things. Crazy things. Like, maybe they pushed me through that and I wouldn't be taking as well as they were taking their things. But when you ask them, like, are you happy? They say yes. It's like, what do you mean yes? Like, literally you spent 3 nights in the hospital. Yes, because I accomplished everything that I wanted to do. I'm not a billionaire. I'm not a super famous person. They don't stop through the street to, like, ask for a signature. But I have a family. I have the enough money to, you know, like, my things, give the things that my children want. I can go to the beach. I can wake up at 10 if I want to, or maybe at midday, and I'm happy. I'm happy. So knowing, like, I want to get to a point in my life where I accomplished everything that I wanted, and I can take the moment to say, okay, I can keep going. I can keep coming up with ideas, keep working, keep everything, but I know that I'm happy, and I know that there's no reason I shouldn't be happy in the next 20, so to say, years. I think that's my goal.
We have a closing tradition on First Moves where we ask our guests to bring a item that has a specific value to them. What did you bring for us today?
Okay, so I said it before, you can't laugh. I was actually thinking, like, what should I bring? I thought of, like, bringing the EpiPen, because that's the thing that I use for whenever I have to, you know, emergency. But then I was like, no, let's do something more personal. So I took Chadi. So when I was younger, I always complained to my parents because everyone had, like, a teddy bear or something to, like, sleep with. And because I used to sleep with my sister, I didn't have anything. I had my sisters. And then I came here 2 years ago, and I felt quite lonely. I was like, oh, I don't have anyone in the room. Like, what do I do now? And then I called my dad, and he was like, oh, one day you'll have a teddy bear. I was like, yeah, sure, one day. And last year, I didn't get my teddy bear. During summer, I didn't get my teddy bear. And then I got here in September, and I told my dad, like, oh, dad, like, today I had this talk to a professor, because she told me that I should, like, propose myself as an astronaut. That's another part of my life. But she was like, oh, like, you really should consider the fact of, like, presenting yourself for the 2026 or 2027 astronaut career thing. And then 2 days later, I received a box in my house from IKEA. So I was like, not me. Like, probably I didn't buy that. So I opened, because it was like Marta, and it was like a Saturn lap and my teddy bear. So I called my dad crying, like, fully on cry. I was like, dad, no, there's no way you got me, like, not only a teddy bear, like, a teddy bear with, like, an astronaut. No, like, that's for me. It's not about, like, having a teddy bear, of course. It's about knowing that my parents are there. They support me. Knowing that no matter how nerdy I'm outside, my family and my friends still love me. That my dreams one day, hopefully, will come true. And people, like, are supporting me on that. And also, like, when I go to bed, knowing that it doesn't matter how far away your family is, that if you took the risk and you're here, they're still going to count on you. And they're not going to leave you out, like, oh, no, you're not part of my family now. Like, you're living away. No, they call you. They're there. They come and visit. And family, for me, it's a big thing.
That's a very nice and personal item to bring onto the podcast.
Yeah, that's really beautiful.
I'm
and
glad
I think
you didn't laugh.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely not.
No, I mean, I smirked, but it's because it's very cute. And I think also, like, it's, I mean, I don't know, and I don't mean to go, like, too deep and personal now, but I think you said, even if I'm so nerdy, they'll still love me. I think it's because you're so into these things and so excited that it's why they love you. So,
thank you so much for
yeah,
that one.
So I think that's awesome. I think it's a great story and something to hold on to. And maybe in a few years, Sebastian, I can look up and wave to you when you're in the ISS.
There, like, going around.
Exactly. That'd be pretty cool.
Very cool.
Martha, thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much.
You.